Hey, listeners, it's me, Alex, of John and Alex Hate Stuff. John and I live in an apocalypse at the moment. The air quality is literally the worst in the world, plus the pandemic and all these, you know, other, what I like to call shit-tasms happening. Shit-tastrophes. So we weren't really feeling very, hey, let's make with the whimsy and joke around about Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe. So here is an old episode of the Alex Cast, my other podcast. This dates from some time in the past that I should have looked up before. Watch, this is going to be seamless. Hey, I figured it out. This is from January 30th, 2017. John stops by and we talk about Neil Breen's delightful Fateful Findings. It's a movie. It happened. The findings, they were fateful. We will be back for the next episode. It will be The Lighthouse, as was scheduled this week, but you can probably hear it in my voice right now. It's really hard to talk in Portland, so yeah, we need the break. So please enjoy this old episode of the Alex Cast featuring John, where we discuss Neil Breen's Fateful Findings. Bye. This is the theme to Alex's show, the opening theme to Alex's show. John called me up and said, can we watch some Neil Breen? I said, that's a dumb idea, so why don't we do it anyway? Now it's the theme to Alex's show. I'm not going to do the whole thing. This is the Alex Cast, where we talk about Neil Breen movies. Neil Breen looks like Gary Shandling, to explain that theme song. And John C. Myers is in studio. Hello, John.
Hello. I like that you immediately assume everyone is like, oh, yeah, Neil Breen. Of course I know who Neil Breen is.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I?
He looks like Gary Shandling.
The guy looks like Gary Shandling.
Okay, so here's the deal. Here's who Neil Breen is. Imagine someone that, like let's say you're someone that lost the use of their body from the neck down. And decided that they wanted to be an interpretive dancer.
That's apt.
Neil Breen is that to movies, where apparently he wanted to make movies, but he has as little skill at movie making as anyone that's ever existed.
I would wager, like, take Tommy Wiseau, the creator of The Room, the famously bad movie The Room. Take him, and instead of being charmingly foreign, he draws trained sonas of himself on DeviantArt.
Yes. Yes. He is, I've never heard the term a trained sona before.
Oh, you never have?
No.
It's people that basically like draw versions of themselves as Thomas the Tank Engine.
That's exactly what I was picturing.
Yeah, which is like expressionless. Like, I fully believe he's on the spectrum somewhere. Like, he has no idea what actual human emotions are, how people actually interact. He's just seen a picture of it once.
Yeah, there was a lot of this movie. All right, you know what? Let's
there is the most of this movie. Let me possibly be.
All right, let's set this back up. Okay, so we watched Neil Breen, Fateful Findings. So that was the name of this.
Mm-hmm.
All right,
streaming on Amazon Prime.
Yes, it's free on Amazon Prime. If you want that to, you know, ruin your day, let me try it this way. Without kidding, I'm not going to play dumb. I'm going to right now describe what I think this movie was about. Now, how many times have you seen this?
This would be the third time, I believe.
Okay. So I'm gonna have to give it a try because you probably have better insight than I do. Neil Breen, who looks like Gary Shandling, when he was a kid, had a friend, and they found a mushroom that disappeared, and there was a magical treasure box in it.
That tracks.
Fast forward, he gets hit by a car, which I don't know what that does to the plot, but he gets hit by a car, meets... Then and he's a writer and a hacker, and he steals secrets. People disappear.
Mm.
The end?
Well, essentially. So, okay, what you're leaving out is, so he, as a kid, he and his friend find a mushroom that turns into a magic box. He takes a stone out of it. She takes some other stones out of it. Makes a bracelet out of them. Later, he gets hit by a car. And they make it seem like the person driving the car or in the car is important. But they are not at all important. He goes to the hospital. This doctor helps him, although she's not his doctor. Turns out to be his friend. Then a bunch of other stuff happens that's unrelated to anything else. And then they kind of get back together. And then he apparently his being hit by a car turns him into a hacker. He wasn't a hacker before. And he hacks into government secrets. And then exposes government and corporate stuff.
Okay.
And then it was a magical day.
Wait. Now let me rewind here.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't a hacker before he got hit by a car. I missed that completely.
No, I think is the thing, because the whole thing, because he's like, I'm not writing any more books, and he's like constantly opening, like coming out to people that he's a hacker. He's like, I gotta be honest with you, I've been hacking into government secrets. So no one, if he had been a hacker before, either he was a hacker before and it took him getting hit by a car to admit it, or that somehow him getting hit by a car gave him the ability to hack into websites. Which I don't even know what that, because all the laptops he uses in the movies are never on. They're always turned off. And he has like six of them in his office.
Wait. So he was a novelist before he got hit by a car.
He was a writer of novels.
Of novels. Before he gets hit by a car.
Yes.
Getting hit by a car was the thing that allowed him to be a hacker.
Apparently.
But let me take a step back there.
Yeah.
Why did he have all those other computers then?
To write a novel. Each a computer per chapter is the rule for writing novels.
That's why mine went so poorly.
Right.
Now
you
I
wrote
understand.
It all on one computer.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah.
Okay. So he finds a magical stone when he's a kid
mm-hmm.
with that girl. He grows up to be a really good novelist.
Well, there's like a throwaway line about him being like, I don't remember.
You're wrong. Sorry, just remembered. He's got his master's in computer science.
Okay,
he said.
That's what it is.
Yeah, no. So he was good at computers beforehand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Him getting hit by the car literally doesn't have a plot point.
Yeah, well, it allowed him to meet the doctor.
Oh, that's right. The doctor who turned out to be the girl he was friends with and found the magical rock as a child.
That you don't know about until they inexplicably invite that doctor to a barbecue. Or she just shows up. It's never really elaborated as to how if they invited the doctor from the hospital or if the doctor
The doctor
shows
from
up.
The hospital!
Yeah, that's all they say.
Okay. So, let's presume that him getting hit by that car, the only reason for that to happen is to reintroduce him to the girl that he lost contact with, that he found the magical stone.
But
what did that magical stone do then?
It made that smoke appear. The
weird smoke stuff.
Yeah. No, I don't. Yeah. It's up to you to decide as the audience, I guess. Because basically, so he gets hit by the car.
Yeah.
And then like, I think that activates the powers because then he gets up out of the hospital.
But what
bed.
Powers?
I think he saw Unbreakable and then kind of went with that. And like,
okay.
Because he's like not. He only has, like, the idea of what's being presented to him, not, like, subtext or anything. He's just like, okay, so that activates this magical powers. I don't, he doesn't do anything with them? Well, he materializes through a door at one point.
Oh, that's right. He can materialize through a door.
And I'm assuming, like, and then there's that spectral figure that shows up with the shoes that you see. That I'm not sure it's also supposed to be.
And there's also hooker shoes that disappear when he gets hit by the car.
Yeah. Who's that supposed to be?
Okay. So let me, okay.
Audience, I equally recommend that you check out Fateful Findings so you know what we're talking about, and I equally recommend that you do not watch Fateful Findings because it is awful.
I'm still a little, okay, so his magical powers mm-hmm. that he gets, so he, no, wait a second, he has magical powers as a kid because he makes a mushroom disappear.
Well, is that him, or is that just,
or he finds magic?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's some kind of magic. Now, this magic does fuck all until he's, 58? Or whatever?
Presumably, yeah.
All right, so fuck all magic till he's 58. He just happens to be a really great novelist after going to school for computer programming.
Based on everything else that happens off screen, I'm guessing the magic happened off screen. Like a lot of things, like he probably can write well because of the magic.
Okay. That's what I was thinking.
Because there's whole swaths of this movie that happen. Like they reference things that happen that you never see.
All right. So, okay. Let me explain to the audience here, because a lot of you haven't watched it. Nothing in this movie has any consequence. So at one point, spoiler alert, his wife overdoses on pills. He gets upset for a minute, and then literally it's never referenced again.
Yeah.
There's no funeral. There's no nothing. His friend gets shot in the head, gets covered up as a suicide. It's referenced one more time.
Just to wrap it up. In a
really jarring cutscene.
Yeah.
With his daughter,
no,
maybe.
No, not his daughter, but the young girl that's into him for some reason.
Yeah.
That's never explained.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's pretend. Let's posit a world where he didn't get hit by a car. There's no pill problems. Their friends had a functional social life, and that girl didn't want to fuck him. Nothing would change about the plot of the film.
Well, no, because the pill problem happened because he was on pills and she was stealing his pills. If he did not have those pills, she might not.
She was on pills. Because she didn't like her job at the bank.
Right, but she was stealing his pills. She would
but
not
she was
have
stealing
had
his
access.
Pills from his psychotherapist. That's not pain pills from the car accident.
He was
getting those from his psychotherapist.
Yeah, but they were just pills.
But he must have been going to the psychotherapist previous to the car accident.
Right, but it's only but the pills really start happening after the car accident.
But that was like a.
But here's the fun thing though about this movie is that we're both right.
Probably.
Because
I also don't
matters.
Know how... All right, so... Other than the time jump from... Judging
scene
by the
scene.
Cars not, 2002 and the 40-year time jump to 2005, again, in 2002, there's cars... that scene should have been set in about, 76?
Yeah, he gets hit by a car and it's supposed to be like...
No, I'm saying when he's a little kid.
Yeah, when he's a little kid, yeah, it's supposed to be a flashback, but the cars are the same cars.
So somehow he's a little kid. But anyway, that's just shitty movie making. So, okay, so let's, from when he got hit by a car till the end of the movie, could have been 3 years or 2 days. I literally don't know. I don't understand the time frame. I don't get.
How about this? This explains it. Okay. Neil Breen is Dr. Manhattan. Like, all time is happening at once for him. And so there's no... He can't extrapolate it out into be a linear time form or linear time frame because it's all the same to him. It's all at once. So it's him... So that's why the scenes happen before they should happen or it's all mixed up because it doesn't matter to him. He's all experiencing it at the same time. He is Dr. Manhattan.
Okay. So, all right, now this is actually making sense.
Yeah.
So
instead of being
powers,
crazy autistic,
so the
he's
powers,
a superhero.
So this is actually an autobiographical film about Neil Breen. It's that he got powers that he can witness time at once. He doesn't see time sequentially.
Yeah.
So all the things in the movie that make absolutely no sense is actually because they're happening to him simultaneously, and he doesn't have the ability to parse them out to explain to us mere mortals that need things like cause and effect.
Right.
Or... some kind of foundation to try to sink our teeth into to make any sort of fucking sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's all just happening at the same time.
Now, why is he like a borderline autistic weirdo that all of his emotions make no sense?
Same thing.
Okay, just because
I mean,
Dr.
Manhattan didn't have a whole lot of, you know, he couldn't.
But at least
humans.
Dr. Manhattan like cloned himself and like really like gave some deep dickin' to his wife.
But
this one, he gave a tiny little pecs. On the tip of the nose, and then ripped her shirt and started laughing and hugging.
But do you want more of that? Like, do you want more of him doing that? So if you think about it, that's surprisingly thoughtful that he just had one of him do that. Because if he had a lot of him do that, think how upsetting that would have been.
See, I'm torn here because, like, that's like the Tommy Wiseau The Room thing where they... Oh, you've not seen the whole movie.
No, but I know...
They keep cutting... Like, he has, like, 9 sex scenes.
Yeah.
It just keeps happening. But this movie, like... Yeah, it's tough because I don't want to see him in a sex scene, but also him for a solid 45 seconds at a time, lightly pecking some woman is really gross.
Yeah, well, it's like, and that's true of all of his movies. He has, I believe, 4 movies now. His first one is Double Down, Then there's I Am Here, ... Now. Then this one, Fateful Findings. And then his new one is Pass Through, which I have not seen.
Yeah. I don't...
But they all have that element, not necessarily the element of, like... There's always, like a love scene. In all of them, there is some sort of love scene. Not as many, I suppose, in this one, but as compared to this one, but...
It's just... Here's... Okay, and that's it.
Like, it would make more sense if there were, like... If it was, like, he's this greasy guy who's just trying to make these movies to get these like, yeah, seemingly attractive ladies to touch him in any capacity. But it's not even that. It's this weird...
Yeah, there's just a lot of side tit, as you pointed out. Yeah. What I... Okay, here's... I guess the kind of... what I'm trying to get across here is... Why bother? Like, I don't want to watch him have, a simulated fuck scene. But why bother having what would be the length of a movie sex scene... Of him literally hugging and doing mwah, mwah kisses.
Because that's the same to him. That is the same as sex.
Like, is he five? Like, does he think that's how babies are made?
Yes. Yeah.
It is. So that's terrible. And I still can't get over how bad the sound mixing is.
Yeah.
I can't understand how you can be in a room. Well, same room.
Yeah.
How does the sound sound so different? That's impossible.
Yeah.
He doesn't have different. It just doesn't make any.
Essentially, it's basically like if you turned on the air conditioning and turned off the air conditioning during different scenes. So basically, like when you're recording audio or mixing audio for a movie, there's usually what they call room tone, where they record quiet for like 30 seconds.
I was trying to mimic what a Neil Breen movie is like.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you try to do that, and then you sort of use that to, I'm terrible at audio mixing, but it's basically like you use that to do that kind of thing. But this
can
is like,
can you stop mansplaining to me, John?
I cannot.
I know how room tone sounds.
Yeah. I'm just explaining to the viewer.
Yeah.
Who is,
Hey, Steph, do you understand what he's saying? there's apparently one person.
There's the one viewer.
Yeah. I get what you're saying. It's just shocking to me.
Yeah, it's real bad.
But it's harder to make it that bad.
Like, no, it's surprisingly not. Like,
but how you're in the same room? Like, I get when you're like, I would get if it's any kind of complex shot. They're literally at a table in a room. You just don't have the air conditioning on.
Yeah, or
just always have it on.
Or it's that you have mic'd people differently. You know what I'm
like? But I don't think they're mic'd. I think it's just...
I think maybe one of them is mic'd.
Oh.
Is the idea. Like they have, they have like two. So two people are mic'd. Another two people are just either like just the...
Are getting picked up
I'm guessing there's a boom mic or just the audio camera
what?
Mic.
I think you're right. Because
that's exactly what it is.
I think it's because when in that room, when they're all sitting at the kitchen table in that one scene, it was the people... It's the diagonal people are the ones that sounded with the... noise. You're right. It's the other diagonal people probably are mic'd.
It's probably... There's a boom mic. And there's two people wearing lavalier mics, wearing clip-on mics, whatever. And then they're just trying to pick up the audio from the other people.
Yeah.
Rather than mic everybody.
This
is so technically and competently made. It's fascinating. Like, and not even... Like, not in a... Well, it's fun. In a certain how it's done, because it is sort of this mystery of how it's that bad, but it is sort of fascinating just how off it is. It's so weird. Like, it's not even just like overtly that bad. I mean, it's that bad, but it's like, it's not fun that bad. It's just bad.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like the level of incompetence isn't like it's not even like negligent. It's that it's, yeah, I know they're not trying to make it that it like terrible, but it seems effortful and it's shitty. Like, it's not, it's not one of those movies that's like, oh, it's so bad, it's good. It's that, I think it's just, it seems like he wants to make a good movie.
Well,
it's actually upsetting.
Well, it's just one of those things that everyone has seen just remarkably shitty movies, to some degree or another, but just the, how collaborative an effort filmmaking is, like just that all the levels that this had to suck on.
Yeah. That's the thing is like, I guess I've never this might be the worst movie I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And that's saying like, I mean, I've watched some fucking garbage films.
And that might be the worst one ever. Like, I just watched recently Lake Placid.
Oh, with the crocodile?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or alligator.
Whatever. Literally, there's a scene where one of the actors says his direction, where he goes, oh yeah, probably is that sarcastic. He literally, in the final cut of the film, he read his line redirection, and it comes out in the final thing. He literally reads it that way.
Wow.
And that's in the final cut of the fucking movie. The movie's like 82 minutes long.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, it is a horrific pile of shit. I sat through Highlander 2, The Quickening. That's the one where it turns out they're from another planet. Yeah. And, yeah.
That's the what's his name? Michael Ironside's one.
Yes, yeah. That is the Michael Ironside one. Which God bless him, because he's such a lovely man, and to have to be involved in that. But this was like, this was the first movie I think I've seen that I literally could make a better movie than this.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And that's not like, I'm not particularly good at acting.
No.
I don't really know how to like do stuff. But I think given, how much do you think I could probably make that movie for $4,000.
If that.
Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah. It's really bad.
Yeah. It's shocking. So let me kind of get the, so this movie was, I've never seen a Neil Breen film before. I've seen the Breen in Star Trek before. They fought in the pits with people on DS9.
They're great.
Yeah. Yeah. They've got like boxy heads. That's a really deep cut. That's actually a species in Star Trek. So just to let the audience know that wasn't me trying to make a joke. That's just me pointing out why I'll never have a girlfriend again. Where did Neil, like, what, why do you know who Neil Breen is? I guess is the question I'm asking you. Like, where, how did this walking abortion of a movie maker possibly enter into your sphere?
Kind of like The Room. I feel like I saw the trailer for Fateful Findings online a long time ago on like FARC or something, you know, something stupid and old, where I was like, oh man, this looks stupid. Okay. I've watched it. I'm done with that now. And then randomly at the Hollywood Theater, they showed this. They showed this movie. The Hollywood Theater, a fantastic theater in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, this was your first Breen?
This was my first Breen, okay. Yeah. And they showed it. And so a bunch of friends and I, these guys that I watched a bunch of Mystery Science Theater with and all this stuff and love terrible movies, we all convened and went to go see this. And it was so much – it was one of the best theater-going experiences I've had. Because everyone in the theater is just like talking and, you know, razzing the damn thing. And then after that, I started looking more into him and then found some of his other movies and watched those. And they are even worse than this one.
That's the part that it's shocking to me.
Yeah.
That this could get worse. Like the audience at home, I'm so hesitant to say, but like, I kind of want you guys to like watch like a bit of it. Like, don't sit the whole, because I mean, it is laborious. Like, it takes
barely over an hour and a half.
Yeah, no, it's a short film, and it felt like a long fucking time.
It is very, very long. But that's true of all of his movies.
It's like,
and they all have the same thing too, where like the government and corporate greed and corruption, he foils them. Through some,
but it's so, I guess, I mean, we should probably just explain what happened. So he's a hacker and he steals government and corporate secrets, both national and international.
Yes. So he says.
My favorite line of that movie. So the end of the movie is basically becomes like a Snowden type thing. And he gives this press conference which
is not set up at all. All of a sudden he's just giving this press conference.
It's literally this guy, he's a novelist, I guess a well-paid one, because he's got a nice house. So he's a novelist that's a hacker that somehow just can do a press like, it's just, there's no, I don't know how to say it. There's no cause and effect. Like, nothing in the, like, that's what I was saying about him getting hit. Like, there's nothing in the film couldn't be excised from the film and have the film make less sense. It's just, every part of it is like, there's
things just happen.
There's two plots of like really major characters dying that literally could just have it.
There's things that follow from scene to scene, but in terms of like overall effect, it doesn't matter. Like,
yeah,
you can see how like, this couple is having a terrible relationship to her murdering him, I guess. Like, there's something there. There's some kind of through line. But, like, the main plot, the big story, yeah, none of that tracks at all.
But even those subplots don't make sense. Like, the one where, okay, so there's the main couple, which is Neil Breen and Russian lady.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally
Clara
don't know any of their
Landrat
names. Landrat. Yes.
Is the actress's name.
Yes.
Landrat.
Jack Starlighter. It's like a fucking Star Wars name. But, so that's the main couple. Then they have their friends that, one is an alcoholic and one has huge tits.
Jim and Amy, I think her name is.
Oh, well, Amy, huge knockers. So here's one scene. This is the third book. Oh, baby, we never have sex anymore. I miss having sex with you. And she's like, ugh, my back hurts and I'm having trouble at the bank. Next scene. You're not even interested in me anymore. You're only interested in your Ferrari. There's nothing happened between the two. The way that it's cut, it sounds like it's about 10 minutes later in the same evening, mm-hmm, where it was, I want to fuck you. And then the next scene is, you don't pay attention to me anymore. You care about your Ferrari, where it's like, those are both two tropes that are used. Like, one, the guy doesn't care and he likes his car like, you know, like it's a woman. The other is, you know, the guy's like, you know, just a slob, like, I want to get some pussy. But they don't make sense together. They're two different bad stereotypical guy storylines, and yet they're smashed together with nothing cut between them.
But to the trained sona of Neil Breen, it's all the same.
Oh,
it is exactly
God.
That is 100% that works. That tracks.
Neil Breen knew he could make a movie, so he took a scene after a scene after a scene and cut them together.
Yeah.
Neil Breen sure made that movie.
Well, the other ones, and I mentioned this when we were watching it, the Double Down and I Am Here Now, are so much more like stock footage heavy. Like, there's so many scenes in, I think it's I Am Here Now, that take place like outside of a bank, where it's like outside of an office, because all of the scenes are outside because he can't afford to have lights. But just like, so many things will happen with just like stock footage, and not even just like stock footage, but like stock, like animations, the things you'll see like on the news behind graphics.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
like dollar bills floating through the air, that kind of thing.
Well, that's
like,
that's
like that. He uses those.
Well, that's like a Birdemic, where like the explosions of Birdemic look like they got it. Like, there was like if there's an MS Paint version of animations, that's where he got it from. Like, I got explosion number two from this pack. Like, I got bird number one from this pack. That was what I laughed so hard at the end of the film, where he's standing in front of the government building.
Yeah.
It's just this awful green screen, just like.
And the perspective never really changes, like how he, like when it's close up to him, the government, like the building doesn't
exactly
move the same way.
Oh, and it's.
I honestly have never seen you laugh that hard. Like this movie was amazing because it was sort of like Bane, where like, I'm trying to break you.
Yeah.
but I've never seen you like more just like, ugh. But also laugh as hard.
It was it left me like raw. Like it stripped me of all pretense and all ways to like know how to
you don't even know what's real anymore.
I was like so mad at the movie, but then it was just like, so there's one scene. This is the scene that I started like not started, but I think I'd already kind of gotten the giggles at this point. But so he's talking to one of his therapists, because there's multiple. Well, no, there's
or
not.
Is there?
There's one therapist and then one transdimensional hippie lady that theoretically is a therapist, because she disappeared the same way the weird priest in the desert near the
after,
book disappeared.
After a post-it note on the door says she's not here anymore.
Oh, Jesus Christ. But so he's at his other therapist, not her. And so here's the scene. I'm a therapist. You're saying stuff that a therapist would say. Cut to the door of the therapist's office. Cut back to inside the therapist's office. He's wearing a different jacket. It's a different therapist therapy session.
Saying the same thing.
The same people.
Yeah.
The same room. The only cut between the two to differentiate that this is a different scene, a different day, is cutting back to the door. Why? Why?
Yeah.
Why would... Because
Because he
pays no attention to time in this. Like, as I said, this is a timeless film in that literally the concept of time stopped. This was a thing of like eternity. Like, you know, hell is being stopped in your worst moment for the rest of eternity. That is this movie where it's just like there's no time. Like a clock, like the beginning of the movie could have been like some surrealist thing where a clock, like you watch 1 second click and then 88 minutes later, the next second click. And you're like, oh.
Well, the best part is, so imagine a therapist's office. In your mind, imagine a therapist's office. You're probably thinking like a couch or like Dr. Melfi's office from The Sopranos. This is a conference room. It's an empty conference room with a giant table and empty chairs along the conference table and them sitting at each side of it.
It's
like they don't even try to hide it, like make it look like something else. They're just like, no, the conference room B is open. So why don't I shoot in there for the
afternoon? Literally that trope from like any movie where like they show the loneliness of being rich, where it's two very rich people on either end of a giant table. Well,
like
giant
Citizen
table.
Kane, how they get further and further away.
Exactly. Yeah. This is that, but in a room with like a $200 IKEA table and
there's four or five chairs on each side.
So it's like a solid, like a 13-seater table that they're at either end of in a therapy session. And my God, that guy, and I'm not one to critique men's fashion, but dude, that guy's coats were so poorly fit. Like, they just did not hang well on him.
Like, he's a tiny man that will just go ahead and buy children's clothes. And then they put him on and like, well, shit, we spent the money. So we can't possibly change back. The sleeves like go halfway down.
Yeah.
Like I got this mutual acquaintance of ours, Ray, gave me a bunch of suits, and we're built the same, like torso wise.
Yeah.
But I have much longer arms than him, and so they would always just come down to like halfway.
Oh really?
Yeah. So that's always what I think of, because I'm like, he's like, how are them suits? I'm like, they're great. Yeah. I can never wear them because I look like a gorilla.
Yeah. The back of the collar like stuck up like a Nosferatu kind of
thing. And no one bothered. Everyone like, no, go with it. That's good.
It is. Oh, so let's back to this movie not making any sense. Why did he go to a therapist? Let alone two therapists. What was he there for?
Yeah, you know. Why, you know, problems that we...
Because he seemed like, I mean, it's like the room where Tommy's like the best guy ever. This guy didn't have any problems. Everybody else had drinking and pill problems. He was like, he was on pills. He's like, nah, I think I'm done taking them.
Maybe he was there talking to him about how messed up everyone else was and how much it affected him.
Because, those scenes didn't make any sense. And then,
Really wanted to hear about that, the report about elephants that the young girl.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That was... The young girl that then, because of that, inexplicably shows up later and wants to have sex with him for some reason.
Doesn't take her tits out, but takes her tits out. They do the Fast Times at Ridgemont High, young girl takes her bikini top off at the pool and then doesn't turn around to camera.
Well, she turns her head and then like kind of like murmurs his Dylan, like kind of says his name. So upsetting.
I can't say again because this was something I said during the film where it's like either show tits or don't. What's the point of doing the tit scene and then not showing tits? It's like he made it to be edited for USA 1997 late night theater.
Well, it's I said this when we were watching it. The other one, I Am Here Now, has a much more upsetting, like, non-boob shot. To the point where, like, Patton Oswalt has this whole bit about, like, sort of the softening of dirty words makes them way more creepy. And it's like that. It's like because they go out of their way to not show the nudity, it's much more upsetting than if he just like went like, yeah, and then I got this girl to take her top off in the movie. Like that's a sort of like level of depravity and awfulness that I'm used to. So when it's like, no, I want to have boobs, but I can't possibly show boobs, is so much more like this weird repressed. It's way more awkward.
Like it's the kind of thing that someone that like murders children would do. Like that later you're going to find out there's
your,
like
your first Neil Breen accused child murderer.
Yes.
From Alex Bolden.
Yeah. Cause like, it's just, it seems like they're going to find graves in his basement. Cause it's like, it's that level of like, that's not the way humans. And then just paired with the sort of fuck scenes where It's literally they're mwah kissing, but for like but you, what, the thing 45
is,
seconds.
The thing is you're gonna find these creepy graves. You're gonna dig them up, and all it's gonna be is the word "child" written on a piece of paper and they're crossed out. You know what?
You're 100% right.
For Neil Breen, that is the same thing.
That is 100% right. That is exactly what it would be. And it would, and it wouldn't be like dug very well. Like, yeah. You know, and the paper would be really fresh.
They're like 4 inches deep at most.
Oh God, that fucking "this is a magical day" thing.
Yeah. So when they're children and they find this mushroom that turns into a magical treasure box that gives them these magical rocks. Don't worry if you can't follow because none of this makes any sense.
Yeah.
Oh
no, I get it. It makes complete sense. So
she to celebrate this moment, the young girl writes in a notebook that has nothing else written in it. Writes it's a magical day. And then later when they reconnect at the barbecue, her growing up to be a doctor that comes to his barbecue inexplicably.
Hey, you're the doctor from the hospital. Yeah,
she goes to pull her cell phone out and this same notebook, not weathered or aged at all, some 30 years later, just falls out of her pocket and he finds it and sees that it says it's a magical day and that's how he remembers that they know each other.
Yeah. It's...
But they at least, as I said, like they at least give a nod to the fact that she's like, I never bothered to look at your name on the chart. Because there's no, like, you're like, oh yeah, Dylan Smith, or like, you know what, Dylan Jorgensen. I know that guy.
Maybe we live in this movie is set in a universe where only organic things age. That's why all the cars were modern back then. And that's why our notebook didn't age after 40 years. So this is a universe which is that's why time is all fucked up. This is a universe in which time froze in 2003, but all the humans still age and live in it. But they live in just Las Vegas 2003 for the rest of eternity.
That, there's something to be said for Las Vegas for nothing aging. That's inorganic. This is deeper than I actually thought.
Okay, so again, more spoiler alert here. All right, so the end of the movie is this. He's giving this this speech saying...
I'm not convinced the movie ever ended.
I'm sure it's still happening right now. Like, yeah, I think my TV is just going to start playing
scenes.
Yeah,
we turned our attention away from it.
Yeah. Well, because again, there's so many scenes that like, it seems like it's such a poorly edited movie. Like, it seems like there's another 40 minutes that got excised. That like, I wouldn't be surprised if it takes over my TV and just starts playing now all these other scenes. But so the end of the movie, he's giving this big speech going, the corruption of national and international governments and banking and blah, blah, blah is bad. So during that, there's this hilarious montage, which is not supposed to be hilarious, of bankers killing themselves.
Yeah.
Which is, it is done in such... It is such shit.
Yeah.
It is comically awful.
It is, if you've ever seen Spike Lee's Old Boy, Spike Lee's Old Boy makes a shotgun suicide hilarious. And this tops even that.
Oh, I've only seen like, the original like, Old Boy, which for, is yeah, good.
For like seeming incompetence of like, what were you trying to do here? So viewers, if you have access and are skilled at all, if you can take this movie and like make it a coherent movie, try it, give it a shot. That'd be a fun exercise for you.
You couldn't make it less. Like, I mean, it couldn't make less sense. I mean, because there's nothing. Let me get this. They're killing themselves. He's giving the speech. Banks are bad and things are bad.
I have evidence and documents.
And factual documents, documented facts. And it just, I mean, it's written like English as a second language, but you can tell that he's a native English speaker. Then cut to from the bushes, a sniper emerges that looks like Zap Rousedower.
Oh, he totally does.
Then the sniper slumps over with a bullet in the back of his head.
Yeah, someone shoots the sniper.
They don't show who shoots him. They don't show a police presence. They don't acknowledge it. That's it. That's how they defuse the thing. They just invented that exact shot. So there's one shot that shows danger.
Well, think about it.
Leading to it.
Think about what stops a bad guy with a gun. A good guy with a gun.
Oh, so
his speech.
So he was Muslim.
Yeah, his speech.
Got it.
Yeah, his speech fired up Al Qaeda and shot the guy.
Oh, so he was part of ISIL. Yeah. Got it. I've never been like fear happy, happiest. Yeah. Like where it's, I'm so fucking angry at this movie, but I'm so happy that it was in front of me. It's just rolling wave of confusion.
It's like with everything else that's going on right now, like, and how messed up everything is. It's so lovely to just focus on this one awful thing and to just give yourself to that.
Okay,
just be like, this is such shit and just maddening awfulness, and just to lose yourself in this insanity.
So he leaves. I was gonna say a voicemail. He leaves a, what'd you call, answering machine message? Was that what we used to call them?
Yes.
All right. So he leaves an answering machine message on his own answering machine at the lady that moved in about 2 days after his wife died.
Yes.
In that same bed. By the way, that's the same bed.
Yeah.
His wife died in that bed, and then the new lady moves in.
Yeah. Yeah.
He goes,
why replace her? It's the
lady. I have to go. I got to do something. Don't worry. Everything's okay. That's the totality of the message. Don't worry. I love you. I love you.
Not an upsetting message at all to get.
He drives to the desert. In the desert, there's a book on a pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
Three people in robes that disappear. There's the wind blows, and then the book on the pedestal disappears.
Right. The book on the pedestal that is in the opening shot, and then appears repeatedly, has nothing to do with anything. Like, he picks it up and reads it and gains nothing from that. Like,
he didn't read it, though.
Well, he looked at it. That's the same as reading.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. In Trump's America.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, that's also how I've read Moby Dick, is I just looked at it.
And Moby Dick is terrible. Don't worry.
I've read it.
Fucking Ishmael. It's not even his name, Dick. Okay, so that just didn't make sense. Like, I'm literally asking you this. You've seen the movie more than I have.
Yeah. I've gained more information
about it. You can't parse this.
You picked up more things in this movie than I ever have.
Because I'm
just watching it once.
I'm so confused. Like, normally I would play act at being confused to point out how shitty a film is. I get the major plot, and I hesitate to use that word to insult anything that's ever had a plot before, including Graves. I don't understand any of the mystical aspects.
So it seems like that whatever the power these powers are related to that book, and then these figures show up, and he goes, should I be afraid? Should we be afraid? They leave, the book leaves, and then that's it.
Yeah.
That's not an explanation. That is I'm just it. Saying what happened.
That is what happened.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
That's what happened in the movie.
And then they walk through the forest at the end. And then, like, that same, there's some weird, there's this, like, mythical smoke that comes in that kind of looks like a fart that just sort of, like, wafts in. And that's supposed to be, like, this indication that magic is happening. And then it's just there. Like, that's all it is there for, to be like, oh, this is magic. And then moving on. Because it's not like fantastical things always happen when that thing shows up.
Yeah, nothing.
And there's that weird scene where he's looking in the mirror and he walks away and his reflection is still there.
Yeah.
That was just like, hey, look what I learned to do. Like, it has no effect on anything or does not matter. And
yeah. So there's this video you can watch on the internet that it goes, count the amount of times people pass the basketball, and you're supposed to pay attention to the basketball as they're throwing it back and forth. And during the video, a man in a gorilla suit walks directly through the center of a frame and walks back out again. And you don't see it because you're focusing on the basketball.
Yeah.
This movie is like that, except, like, all you see is the gorilla, and they don't tell you that that's what's happening. They don't explain it later, and it's just literally, like, it'd be us having the conversation, like, yeah, gorilla just walked out, and he'd be like, yeah, gorilla just walked out. Well, it'd be, and then just it doesn't get explained. Like, the sniper that gets shot, that's literally the end of the film. That's the climactic finale of Fateful Findings. Let's go to the name here.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck does that mean?
They found some stuff, and it was good.
And what was fateful about it?
Finding that mushroom turned out to be fateful because it changed their lives.
Did it? Because
he found a black rock that was magical and would disappear and reappear in his hand at times.
Anything other than just have something to look at during the film?
It was fateful that they got together later and that she found him hit by a car.
You literally could have done that. That had nothing to do if anything,
it sounds good.
If anything, his cell phone was more fateful because he dropped his cell phone, and that's why he got hit by the car. So his cell phone is actually more fateful than
which is great. Again, like, the whole time when he gets hit by the car, he's on his phone crossing the street. This is the start of the movie, and you never hear his side of the conversation. It's always because it cuts to, like, his home where his before she dies, his wife. talking to him on the phone, and she's like asking him questions, but he never responds. It just cuts back to him silently walking, holding
his
cell
phone. Yeah, and his mouth isn't moving.
Yeah.
And yet it cuts back to her, and he's supposed to be talking to
and
her.
And he has answered a question, and she just knows, but he's just smiling into the phone.
It's
so bizarre.
Yeah. So here's... I kind of want to watch more of his movies.
Yeah, see? That's the thing. Because there's something about them. They're awful in this very particular way that's fascinating. Much in the same way, like, there's no... Or at least I haven't figured out any sort of, like, algorithm explanation, whatever, for, like, you know, The Room is a certain kind of bad movie.
Yeah.
And this is an even different kind of certain kind of... And that's... I love that stuff. I love that kind of special kind of awful shittiness.
But this is, like... This is a different kind, like, yeah. this is a unique form of that, where it's like, this is too bad for it to be this interesting. Like, cause other ones at least have like a, you kind of, like, you can understand why The Room, because Tommy is such a weird, like, it's so odd that you're like, I can point to what's odd about The Room.
Yeah. But like
this, I can point to what's odd, but not in a way that makes sense of like why a person would choose to do it, you know?
Yeah, like all the weird non sequiturs in the room that people enjoy, where it's just like, well, you know, I got breast cancer, or that you're my favorite customer. Imagine if that was all there was.
Yeah.
There's just this weird, not the movie was just those non sequiturs, and there was nothing sort of bolstering them to any kind of reality.
Yeah. Oh, so on that point, why did the paintings and the mirror start moving on the walls in his room?
Magic. Like I said, so in I Am Here Now, there's a scene where his character, who's a robot alien Jesus, is walking the desert, and there are all these doll heads. And there's a YouTube video of him like having a Q&A at some film festival, and someone asks him about them, and he goes, "Well, it's up to the audience to decide what that means." And everyone just starts booing him because that's a garbage answer.
Yeah.
It makes me think of, there was this movie, and I wonder if I can find it online. There's a movie that was locally made in Iowa called Silver Wings, and it's about these two like fighter pilots that get sucked flying to an ion storm or something, get sucked into an alternate dimension ruled by an evil overlord named the Evil Overlord, and they have to like save the day, kind of thing. And all the jet footage is shot like through a fence, and it's magical. And my friends and I used to watch it in college all the time, and we went to a film festival where the guy was there, the filmmaker was there, and he was like the nicest, most humble guy, and it ruined it.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was just like, well, you know, we didn't have a lot of money, and we were trying to do something. And I was like, no, I want you to be like a jerk.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, I made art here. But it is fantastically terrible. Like, all the sets look like children's theater sets. But that's still a better movie than this. It still is a more coherent movie than this.
I can't think of a movie that makes less sense. I mean, I was sitting here thinking whether Highlander 2 made less sense.
Ooh, that's a good barometer.
This made less sense than Highlander 2.
Yeah.
Because Highlander 2 was that same kind of pastiche of six different movies slammed into one and none became effective.
But there were at least like rules throughout it that stayed consistent.
There was a sort of logic and a sort of plot. I don't understand anybody's motivations. I don't understand who he was talking to on the phone about trying to get another book deal and why I was so mad at that person. Yeah. Like, that made us, I don't understand the
he
therapist.
Had deadlines.
I don't understand why the wife killed herself with pills.
Well, it's one of those things, like, I frequently get so angry at movies. And the only thing that's coming to mind right now is the first Michael Bay Transformers movie. Is I hate in movies when this is the case, except when it's not. So like in the first Transformers movie, the AllSpark, I think is the thing they're after, and it turns. They show you that it turns like whatever inanimate object, whatever piece of electronics, into an unstoppable killing machine, except when it doesn't, because the Autobots aren't that. And so, like, no, it does that, except when it doesn't do that.
Yeah.
But this whole movie is just that.
Yeah.
It's just, this is how it works, except it does not work like that at all.
Yeah.
And yet I love this movie. For that reason.
So this is my thing of being, like, kind of someone that needs to understand stuff. Is there some way for me to find out what, like, more about the film? Like, is there 40 more minutes of footage that at least that would go, oh, a lot of the stuff that I don't get at least was probably in the 40 minutes that got cut.
Right.
Like, is there some way for me to find this out where it's like, okay, well, at least it was there. It's just, you know, one of these weird things where, you know.
Well, it's like that movie, The Cell with Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah.
And yeah, if you watch the DVD, all the deleted scenes made the movie make sense. Like, in terms of, like, plot, like, oh, this is how they arrested the guy. Like, these are some scenes that should have been there, but you just went, no, we don't need those. We need to show the weird CG stuff or whatever. God, I hope not, frankly. I hope that there's not more of this movie than I've already seen. I can't imagine there could possibly be.
I don't want to watch it. I just, I would like to, like.
You just want to know it's there.
I would just, or at least, if there's, like, a script that could at least put me on some kind of terra firma where I could at least go, I don't understand why the things moved in his house. I don't understand what those people in the desert were. A frustrating level, I don't get it.
What's also fascinating is so that this movie was written, directed, and produced all by Neil Breen. But there's a separate guy that's the editor, who I think might also be the guy that shoots it. But really? There is a collaboration that has to happen. There is a discussion about, does this go? Yeah, that. It's not just out of one man's mind, like, you know, or is it just the editor's like, whatever
there's
you say,
an editor?
I'm just doing this. Yeah. And I swear to, I'd have to look at the credits again, but it might be the same guy that shoots it. But yeah, Neil Breen is working with another human being and they're going like, no, don't do that. Do this.
Well, maybe it's like, you know, it's like that guy that plays Tommy, in The Room, like the guy that isn't Tommy, the lead. He wrote a book about it.
Yeah. Yeah. The disaster artist.
Yeah. Where when he was on set, he just kind of became the kind of, I'm just going to go with it. And yeah, whatever, Tommy.
Oh, yeah.
So I wonder maybe if there is an editor that, I mean, you said there's an editor. Maybe he's just going, yeah, whatever, Neil. Like, this is, you know, that's what you want. All right. That's what I'm going to do. You want me to cut that thing there?
In my own extent as a career as an editor, like, I'm not to that degree, but I've done stuff before where I'm like, well, that's stupid, but fine. You want that? Fine.
Yeah.
Like, let's just do that. But I can't, I mean, like, this is a movie. This takes time to put together.
Like, no, I mean, no. Actually, probably doesn't.
Well, okay.
Yeah. This one?
No. I'm sorry. I'm confusing it with most movies.
Yeah. No, that took a...
You probably could have done that in a day.
Like, that was 88 minutes that ran. I'm going to say that took 89 and a half minutes to make.
I also like the idea, though, that maybe, like, right before, you know, like, oh, this movie's got to be done at this time. Here's the deadline. We got to get to this festival. Is it like the day before or like 12 hours before the computer crashed and he lost like all, like the whole project, but he had saved other projects. He was just taking pieces of other projects and slapping them. Like, yeah, I think that's it. Go.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a shot of the therapist door. Oh yeah. Then there's another shot of the therapist. Yeah. Perfect.
Perfect.
Great. Yeah. This that is tracks. Seamless transition between the two shots of the character.
Which would explain so much of the continuity where it's just like, it's like that. What is the Dadaist thing of like cutting up a newspaper thing and throwing it up in the air and then like you make a poem out of that. That's sort of like what this is, except not that artful or intelligent.
Yeah. I need to know more. Like, I wonder if I could book Neil Breen.
I don't know, because I believe there's a subreddit devoted to him.
Yeah.
Chris always telling me a story. He had a friend of ours, this guy, John Worsley, put together a Photoshop of the Breen Lantern, and it's Neil Breen in the Breen Lantern, like the movie, like Ryan Reynolds, except it's Neil Breen. And that made it like to the top of the Neil Breen subreddit, and then got deleted by Neil Breen.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I don't know.
Wait, so Neil Breen has... I don't know. Admin rights on his own subreddit?
I don't know. I have not looked into this. This is just the story. Yeah. But I would like to imagine how else is there going to be a Neil Breen subreddit without him like being in charge of it?
I don't. I could see
or
that
maybe,
happening.
Or maybe he posted it to like Neil Breen's Facebook page. I think maybe that was it.
Yeah.
As he posted it to his Facebook page and Neil Breen was like, hey, thanks. Delete.
Yeah. I want to know more.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's maddening, but there's no answer. That's the thing. There's not an answer. You want it to be something, and it's absolutely not.
So you think that, like, what's
like the maze in Westworld is basically the center of the maze is a Neil Breen movie.
Yeah, that would actually be more satisfying. But So you're so let me parse it this way, because I probably sound like an idiot to the audience here, but I'm struggling to, like, this is something I rarely have so much trouble understanding a thing. You think what we just watched, let me put it this way, do you think that's what Neil Breen meant to make when he wrote a movie and decided to make it? Like, do you think the thing that we watched was what he intended to make?
Yeah, ultimately, I'd say yeah. I think with any filmmaking endeavor, you end up sort of making sacrifices I forget the word I'm looking for. Not commissions.
Concessions.
Thank you. But I think ultimately, yeah. I think because the stuff that happens in there that's so bad, it's not something that you're like, well, I wish we could have had this happen. They were easily fixable problems.
Yeah.
Like I said, like the him on the phone with his wife where you never hear him talk, like that's so easy to just, like, you record something else later and just be like, oh, my day was fine, honey. Oh, yeah. No car. You know, like, there's so many bad examples of that in films, these bad, like, last minute ADR stuff. There's so much stuff that's so easily fixable that he just did not do that tells me, yeah, no, this is what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
Maybe not 100%, but at least like 90 to 95%. This is the movie.
I can't get my head around.
It's also and it is an extreme version, but there's recently, a few months ago, John Mulaney, comedian John Mulaney, he had a short-lived sitcom on Fox that was terrible called Mulaney, and he was on the Pete Holmes podcast talking about it.
Yeah.
And there was an episode like 4 or 5 episodes in where, like, the characters, like, something happens and they end up like almost like switching bodies. And Pete Holmes brought up the fact, like, why did you do that so early? I don't know these characters at all. And you're already deciding that they're, you know, and John Mulaney's like, well, in my head, I knew them forever. Like, these, I knew them very well. So this all made sense to me.
Yeah.
Because I lived and breathed these characters. But to the audience, they have no idea who they are. And I think that Neil Breen, he knows everything that's going on. And so this obviously makes sense because he knows, but he's not, and presumably his editor, he's explained it to his editor, but they just assume that the audience is going to pick up on this.
See, that, like, I kind of hope that's it, because I would just, it's, I want him to understand what the men in the cloaks were. I want him to have that whole story, because if it's just, I guess my problem is if it's just, I want it to be weird and artistic. Mm-hmm. You sucked so fucking hard at making anything remotely like art to even try to say, that's just trying to be surreal, or it is what you think it is.
I think the only thing you could possibly get away with that was at the very beginning when the kids are finding the mushroom, they walk by a cow skull that's inexplicably in the mountains and it like turns and follows them. Like, you could get away with that.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Where it's like, oh, you're entering this magical area. Like, yeah. Where's that? Like, that. Okay, on some level that kind of works, but nothing else in the movie.
Because that's the thing. It's like if he made it in a way that it's supposed to be, and trust me, I wrote a whole book that, you know, you bring your own explanation. Like, I get how this works, but if he was doing that, and that's the movie he made, it's even worse than what I was looking at.
Yeah.
Like, I need it to make sense to him to make it be not the worst thing ever, to make it not be like a holocaust of shit sandwiches. Like, I need something to hold on to.
And I mean, you could argue that there might be a sort of like a Uwe Boll kind of thing. Uwe Boll, famously awful German filmmaker that made like all the worst like video game adaptation movies, yeah, all this awful stuff. And they found out that there was like some like loophole in like German law or something like that, where he basically like could make these shit movies but kind of recoup a lot of the money. They ended up like closing it. It was some like tax loophole or something. But you found out like there's, okay, well, cynically, there's a reason that he's just doing all this awful crap.
Yeah.
And so in theory, there could be some sort of like weird write-off thing that Neil Breen is doing. But I don't think he's that cynical. I genuinely believe that he thinks he's making good movies. I think he's trying to tell the stories that he wants to tell, and that is way more upsetting than just like, yeah, I don't want to make a quick buck.
Exactly.
Which I think is, again, is sort of the side boob thing, is that, like, yeah, you know, rather than just be like, ah, the people want to see boobs, he's like, well, boobs, huh? You want to see boobs, but like, I'm not comfortable with that. So here's some boob.
It's just like the lack of decision making in the film is just it's unsettling.
Yeah.
Yeah. The side boobs and the kissing was just
Yeah.
I don't understand how you can film.
Like if you are listening to this and you are trapped in a dying marriage, you're doing way better than anyone in this movie.
Yeah.
like just imagine how you kiss your spouse. Watch this movie and go like, oh man, we are fiery.
No, this is
a couple of teenagers compared to everyone in this movie.
This has the passionate kissing of your aunt kissing you on your bar mitzvah. That's the level of passionate lovemaking kisses that are bestowed on each.
It's your bar mitzvah, but you fucked up the Torah read. And so yeah, she's still like, true. No, I love you, but, like, that's the level of passion.
Baruchatai, Adam, Ant, and the, oh, God damn it.
Start singing Ant music.
Yeah. Oh, this is so upset. Oh, God. Well, that's our time, John.
Oh, have we seriously spent that much? Yeah. Oh, audience. Sorry.
Hey, I introduced it.
No, I know, but just look, it's either you didn't watch the movie and you just listen to a couple of lunkheads try to solve their way through an unsolvable Rubik's Cube, or you watched the movie. Either way, I apologize. I don't.
Now that you bring that up, I wonder what was worse or what's better. If you listen to this and have seen the movie, because then I think you can kind of commiserate with us,
That's all this is just like like we've both been through this and we're trying to figure it
out. But I also wonder, so if anybody out there that listened to us now and hasn't seen the movie and has the cojones to watch the film, I wonder if maybe they would get something different out of it after hearing us.
Well, actually what I want is don't watch, before you watch the movie, if you're going to watch the movie, before you watch the movie, write down what you think this movie is.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Like, write a synopsis of what you, like, based on our sort of weird trying to puzzle this out. Like, tell me what you think the basic plot is. Chances are, you're going to be right. And that has nothing to do with our being effective communicators. That's just, you just are going to be right.
Yeah.
But I'm still fascinated by that.
I mean, frankly, if we put this in the beginning of the show and said, hey, just guess at stuff that could be in a movie that's terrible, you're probably, like, I'm going to say within the scope of the audience, someone's probably going to guess a lot of this film.
Yeah.
You know, just because it's like, crappy acting.
And their guess is going to be more linear and make more sense than this actual movie.
Well, I mean, again, it couldn't be less linear. There's no causality. This exists in a universe of loops inside of loops that don't actually connect and have no, it's loops of different fiber. It's a hay bale plot line of just look at a hay bale. Yeah. Follow that line. That's what the plotting of this is.
That's going to be my rear window, is if I get into some kind of horrible accident where like I'm immobilized for a while, instead of like looking out of a window and solving a crime, I'm going to re-edit this movie so that it makes some kind of sense.
Yeah, God bless you. Yeah, maybe you know.
So if anyone wants to break my legs or pelvis and put me in firm, Neil Breen, if you're out there,
given that I never would have heard of Neil Breen without you, I do have full justification to break something on you, because I would have lived in a world that I never had heard of this man unless you brought it up. Yeah. So, I think frankly, I think an afternoon with some editing software and you willing to do a voiceover, you could turn a coherent narrative.
Yeah. Or at least more coherent than it is.
Yeah, because frankly, if you cut all the magical stuff out, I think you could try to get, like, I think you could probably get, like, a linear narrative out of it. And in no way would it be good.
No.
Or even on the spectrum of good.
Yeah.
But you could make something that I think, because right now, calling this a film or a movie is very generous. It's a sequence of shots that have a similar motif to them.
And again, just this is on Amazon Prime. So just anything that you're struggling with in your life, just remember, this movie's on Amazon Prime.
Yeah. Congratulations. Congratulations on the wave of suicides that listening to that statement just caused.
Yep.
Using your noose, sitting in your car, taking multivitamin pills that are somehow pills.
And smiling as you die.
Yes.
So you're just congratulating you and I, basically, is what's happening.
Well, hey, it is the Alex Cast. Congratulations. All right, we're done.
That's it.
I
screw you, listener.
You still have nothing to plug, right?
Nope, not a damn thing.
All right, good. Neither do I. Except for at the Alex Cast, alexstat.com, whatever, all that crap, you know. Just look for me. That's it. All right. Bye.
Bye.